They can trust government systems. We test them every day. This was a very unfortunate mistake.
Questions and actions following a false missile alert. It's Monday, January 16th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a new Chinese car for America. More female turtles in Australia. Fitness trends for 2018. Quieter airplanes in the sky. It's all on today's VOA Asia. No matter where you live in the world, for most of us, we have never known life without at least a remote possibility of a missile or nuclear strike. Preparing for such a cataclysmic event isn't on our minds most of the time, but increased tensions with North Korea over the past year, amid missile and nuclear tests, along with some searing rhetoric, have brought the possibility of that threat closer to reality. And for several minutes Saturday in the Pacific U.S. state of Hawaii, a warning of an imminent ballistic missile strike caused real panic as people had little idea what to do or where to go in a precious few minutes. A Hawaii State Emergency Management Agency spokesman said human error and a lack of adequate safeguards led to that false missile alert, which went uncorrected for 38 minutes. State Governor David Ige said the alert was sent out during an employee shift change by a push of a button and that there was no automated process to get the word out that it was a false alarm. He apologized and said steps are being taken to make sure it doesn't happen again. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, in an appearance on Fox News Sunday's program, urged the public not to lose confidence in such early warning systems.
So I would hate for anybody not to abide by alert and warnings coming from government systems. They can trust government systems. We test them every day. This was a very unfortunate mistake, but these alerts are vital. Seconds and minutes can save lives.
The Federal Communications Commission has jurisdiction over such wireless alerts. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai called the false alarm unacceptable, causing a wave of panic. He said such mistakes undermine public confidence in the alerting system and reduce their effectiveness. Ralph Kosa is president of the Hawaii-based Pacific Forum, a security think tank, and he tells VOA's Victor Beatty such mishaps cannot be allowed to happen.
It's unfathomable to me that somebody could hit a button and, you know, something didn't pop up and say, are you sure you want to send off an alert? You try to delete a message in an email and they ask you if you really want to delete it. It's quite remarkable that our system didn't have any type of precaution built into it.
Were problems known beforehand about such a potential problem?
Obviously not. In fact, we weren't even aware that there was this email alerting system. All the people in Hawaii knew, as far as I know, was that there was a siren that would go off, similar to the siren that go off for a tsunami warning, but with a different modulation so that we would know it was an air raid as opposed to a tsunami warning. But as I said, those sirens never sounded, which caused at least some people to assume that this must have been a mistake.
Ralph, are residents of Hawaii on edge with regard to a possible North Korean missile attack?
For the most part, no. When I do my speeches and all, I tell people there's a less than 1% chance. Right now, there's no indication that the North Koreans are even capable of firing a missile with any kind of accuracy with a warhead that would survive reentry. I think most people here understand that, but certainly something like this that, you know, says this is not a drill certainly gets people's attention and will probably make them more nervous in the future.
Hawaii, home to the Pacific Command, the Navy's Pacific Fleet, and other military bases, revived monthly testing of nuclear attack sirens in November amid tensions with North Korea. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. South Korea engagement strategy requires daunting diplomacy. Myanmar says first camp for Rohingya will be ready next week. Indonesia cultivates more outward-facing foreign policy. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, and we also invite you to stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Chinese automaker GAC Motor says it's on track to enter the U.S. market in the fourth quarter of next year. Company officials made the statement Monday as they introduced two models at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit that likely will come to the United States. At a packed press conference, GAC showed off a concept gullwing compact electric SUV called the Enverge that one day could be produced. The automobile maker says it will go over 370 miles on a single charge. Also unveiled was the GA4 midsize sedan that will go on sale in China later this month. GAC sold just over 500,000 automobiles in China last year. That's up 37% from 2016. The company says it is negotiating with partner Fiat Chrysler about possible distribution of vehicles, and it has already a research center in Silicon Valley that's working on another one in Detroit as well as a Los Angeles design center. A spokeswoman says the company's first vehicle in the United States will be the GS8, an SUV. It showed a video of seven different models during its presentation. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with David E. Cole. Dr. Cole is a well-known and respected authority on automotive industry trends. The two spoke as Cole was where one expected that he would be.
Well, I'm right now at the GAC motor booth at the Detroit Auto Show press days, the International Auto Show press days. And they just had a press conference a little while ago talking about their products and what they plan to do. And it's a little different now from a few years back when we had a number of Chinese manufacturers bring cars into the basement of Cobo Hall. But things are very different. We're seeing much more investment in the U.S. marketplace. For example, the steering division of General Motors is now Nexteer, owned by a Chinese company. We're seeing a number of vehicles. For example, I think the Buick Envision is actually assembled in China and shipped here. So the merging of the Chinese and the U.S. industry is really underway. And when you consider that the China industry is about, well, not quite yet, but close to twice the size of the domestic industry, it tells you China is a really big deal.
There have always been questions about the quality of the automobiles that the Chinese make. Where does that stand?
Well, you really have sort of two types of Chinese vehicles. You have sort of the pure Chinese, and you have those that are done jointly with somebody else, the Volkswagen and the General Motors. Now you have, for example, Volvo was owned by a Chinese company, and kind of they're all hybrids. And what we have seen, and I think we will continue to see, is increased execution on the products that they're building. And as that occurs, it really tells you that we are in a globally integrated world where the boundaries are disappearing everywhere. Many years ago, we had a conference, our annual management briefing conference. We used the title, A World of Vanishing Boundaries. And it is happening today big time in terms of technology, engineering disciplines. The global boundaries are disappearing. And that's the reality of the future that we're looking to.
But what about the quality of the Chinese-made vehicles?
I would say that initially they were not up to what most people would expect here. I can't attest to some of the new ones that are here, but from every indication, they're becoming much, much better quality. And my guess is that as we look to the future, quality differences will probably disappear.
How is this being met by the U.S. auto industry?
A combination of ways. One, obviously, tremendous emphasis on technology, for example, and particularly things like autonomous vehicle technology, advanced powertrain technology, materials, and so on. Another is partnering across the world, working in all of these emerging markets so that you're not just looking at a competitor, but a partner. And, of course, when you think about Buick as an example, they sell about three times as many vehicles in China as they sell here. And that tells you we're in a brave new world. And it means that the last thing that you should do is sort of sit on your hands and celebrate the past. You've got to be innovative. You've got to be moving forward, partnering. And it's a different world.
From a business sense, is there any worry among the U.S. automakers, which have been fighting off foreign competition for a long time now?
I don't think so. If you're not good at what you do, you're going to have a problem no matter where you operate in the world. So I think it's driving the industry to a higher level of excellence. We're sort of in an innovative hurricane here, is that if you decide to sit out for a while, you're going to have a real problem. I don't care whether you're Chinese, American, German, or Japanese, Korean. This is the world of today, and if you decide that you're going to go back to what you used to do, you're not going to be around very long.
When do you think these Chinese vehicles, maybe in particular the one you're looking at, the GAC vehicle, is going to be available in the United States?
I don't know if that's really defined yet. I think they're looking at it. They look at the marketplace. Is there an appropriate niche in the marketplace? Do they have an appropriate selling strategy, dealer strategy? Is it going to be something like Tesla, where they skip the dealers? Or are they going to work with existing dealers with the brand? That's a work in progress.
David E. Cole is chairman and co-founder of Auto Harvest Foundation. He joins us from the biggest and the best auto show in the world, the Detroit Auto Show at the Cobo Arena in Detroit. David, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you. All the best.
The vehicles produced by the Chinese company are named Trump Chi. Reports say the company is discussing the possibility of selling the car in the United States under a different name. Happening now in Asia, delegations from the two Koreas met Monday to hammer out details about the North sending a troupe of artistic performers to next month's Winter Olympics in the South. Members of the North's famed all-female Moranbong music band are reported to have been hand-picked by North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always happy when you're with us and glad you've joined us for this Tuesday edition of VOA Asia. Researchers say climate change is responsible for the vast majority of green sea turtles in the northern Great Barrier Reef off of Australia being female. The scientists from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say the temperature at which turtle eggs incubate determines the sex of hatchlings. And as Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, the scientists warn that warmer conditions are creating a dangerous gender imbalance.
Almost the entire green turtle population in parts of the northern Great Barrier Reef in Australia is now female. A study of about 200,000 animals in the reef's northern waters found them to be overwhelmingly female. The research was published in the journal Current Biology. There are concerns that the future of the endangered reptile is increasingly precarious. In the Southern Barrier Reef, where conditions are cooler, about two-thirds are female. Researchers say that while they hope for some milder years to produce more males, they expect temperatures to continue to rise. One possible solution to the gender imbalance is to put up tents over beaches where turtles nest to give them shade. Dr. Colin Limpus, Queensland chief scientist, says that cloud seeding is another option.
There is consideration being given to having artificial rain, primarily for how can we get the turtles nesting successfully. At the same time, it's going to cool the sand and should shift the sex ratio towards an increase in males.
The green turtle is one of the largest sea turtles and the only herbivore among the different species. They're named for the greenish colour of their cartilage and fat, not their shells. They're classified as endangered and are threatened by habitat loss, over-harvesting of their eggs and the hunting of adults. The Great Barrier Reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres down Australia's northeast coast. It's home to a spectacular range of wildlife. The reef faces a range of threats, from the runoff of pesticides and soils from farms and warmer ocean temperatures that have caused the mass bleaching of the coral in the past 2 years. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We say hello to everyone who's listening in the Philippines on Falcon Radio at Adamson University. Thanks for joining us today. We also send out our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Jonah Cummings, our engineer, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead.